Jason. This is Tom Slocum. I'm running for Railroad Commissioner here in Texas in the 2022 GOP primary. The first day of voting is February 14th. Election day is March 1st.
Appreciate you coming on the program here today, part of your Railroad Commission tour. This morning, you are on with Chris Moore, Voice of West Texas. And, of course, that is available on the interweb if anybody would like to listen to that interview. And how's the campaign going?
Man, it's been a blur, and it's going to continue being a blur because I am just running around the entire state of Texas. And that's what you have to do when you run for statewide office in Texas. You have to see everybody. And if you're not, then you probably don't have a good chance of winning. But you've got to do your best that you can to try to see everyone and get to know them on a personal level and figure out what the issue is in their region, because there's issues everywhere, and you got to find out what the primary voters really care about.
You bring up a good point. You know, people forget about Texas. It's not only a big state, but you've got different permacultures there. You've got different temperate zones there. I mean, on one side of the state, you've got a legitimate desert. And on the other side of the state, you've got palm trees and a legitimate humidity problems, you know, south of Houston, and hurricanes. And west side, you've got earthquakes. And on the east side, you've got, like I mentioned, hurricanes, tornadoes. You know, the Railroad Commission, some people might argue, it is the most powerful body in the state of Texas. They oversee the power. They oversee the regulatory bodies that are actually in charge of most of the jobs in the state. If you want to talk about jobs and economic development, the oil and gas industry, specifically the mining industry, is the only job producer in the last 10 years. I don't know if people know that. The only industry that's added jobs pre-COVID over the last decade was the mining industry, specifically because of oil and gas and the shale revolution that's happening. So what are some of the concerns you're hearing across the big, vast state of Texas? Because there's different climate zones and problems and pipelines and all kind, underwater pipelines and under above ground pipelines, you name it, man.
We've got a lot of stuff out there, right?
Abandoned wells, I mean, all kinds of stuff. Holy cow.
We've got lots of activity, as one would imagine, in the state of Texas. We have a lot of oil and gas activity spread out almost all over the entire state. There's very few counties that don't have some kind of activity. But as far as the issues that I see, I go around and I talk to people. It was funny. The first thing that happened as soon as I announced, I got a phone call from a gentleman in East Texas. And he said, "Tom, I really would like to sit down and talk to you." He said, "My name's Art Griffin. I'm the chair of the Sabine County GOP." I said, "Well, that's terrific, sir. I'll be right there." And I got there immediately. And when I did, I met a group of people, a group of primary voters, of locals that are very active in the party, and they all told me about their concerns. And I was not really aware that what was going on, and I'm glad they called me. And when I got there, I found out there was a group of people, a company, that had bought land in the Sabine River Valley and the headwaters of the Sabine River, and they wanted to get a permit to build a oil field landfill. They're 200 feet tall and God knows how many feet long in the middle of the river valley where all the fresh water for East Texas starts, which is kind of a sketchy place to want to put a oil field landfill where you're dropping off material that is contaminated with all kinds of things. To want to put that at the headwaters of the fresh water system for most of East Texas, to me, I mean, common sense would tell you that's really not a good idea. And this company was bound and determined to get their permit, and they've made lots of donations. And they've definitely donated to the incumbent in this race that I'm running against. And so the local GOP primary voters there, they see the writing on the wall. They don't like what they see, and they want me to do something about it. And I most certainly will. I believe that Texas has a huge backyard. We've got lots of places. In fact, if they would have just bought their land 15 miles to the west of where their land is, if they would have just bought 15 miles to the west, they probably could have gotten their permit without any issues from anyone, because it would not have been in the river valley. It would have been far and away from it, but they didn't. And because they got it where they did, they knew that they would have to either sell the real estate and do something different, which is what they should have done, or, you know, they'll just start writing campaign donation checks, which is what they did. And so the writing's on the wall for the people in Sabine County and San Augustine County. They know exactly what to do. They're here to support me. And I'm just really happy that I can help them out. And so that's one of the big issues. But there's several others, Jason, that we can go into. But that was actually the most shocking, because the incumbent is actually down the street in that neighborhood, and they all know him, and they all voted for him, and they all decided that this is not something that they can do again, and that he is a career politician that's looking out for his campaign and himself, and not the constituents, not Texans.
Are you talking about Wayne Christian?
That would be the gentleman.
I mean, is that the incumbent we're talking about?
That's correct.
I apologize, because I kind of, one of the things I kind of purposely do is I don't dive into the politics too much, so I can act a little dumb, actually, and kind of navigate my way through and different things. I mean, if I'm, some interviews, don't get me wrong, I'll prepare and do the old school, that sort of thing, but some of these, especially during the races, I like to be a little dumb, and this question might be a little dumb, and I'll phrase it by, you know, I've interviewed Wayne several times. I consider him a colleague of the show. He's been nothing but professional and fair to us when we've asked. But I'll tell you, we have heard and we've gotten some emails from people that have questioned some of his movement and some of his activity. And I did see there was some news stories last year, at least if not in the Texas papers, at least in the political papers, there was a group trying to either recall him or something. So there has been issues with the incumbent, Wayne Christian, as well. At the same time, he does win. So some people are liking what he's doing, but the people that are not happy with some of the things he's doing, they've been vocal. And that hasn't happened with some of the other candidates. So are you hearing that as well, too? I have been. And I'm up here in North Dakota.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, that was a fair thing to say, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's very fair to say. You know, when Ryan Sitt was challenged by Jim Wright, there wasn't a lot of talk or there wasn't a lot of discourse, and Jim Wright barely spent any money at all. And Ryan just sat on his money and didn't do anything.
And I've never even heard of that guy you just said. Who?
Wright. Jim Wright's the new railroad commissioner.
Oh, no, I know Jim Wright. No, Jim, yeah, Jim's been very good to us. And,
but it was a previous one. And Ryan, okay. Ryan did a really good job of getting elected the first time, but he didn't run his primary race at all against Jim Wright. Right. And so now you have Jim Wright there, along with Wayne, along with Christy. And Jim's slightly different than Wayne and Christy. He's an industry guy. And I feel like, you know, as an industry person myself, if I was to be elected, that him and I could work a little bit closer together on things and maybe see eye to eye on things, because he has experience and so do I. And people are like, well, what do you mean? Well, what I mean is Jim Wright has oil and gas experience, and I have oil and gas experience, and Wayne and Christy Craddock do not. And it's that simple.
Do you know what Wayne's background is in terms of?
Financial planner.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
You know, I think he's been planning the finances of his donors. Not kidding.
Well, no, it's a fair thing to say about the financial planning, because when you're talking about oil and gas, there's a lot more risk and a lot more, and I don't mean this to piss anybody off, there's a little bit more intention that goes into an action, because a lot of insurance, a lot of banking, and a lot of, we'll even say education, that's more about the formula and the template to them and financial planning. That's where, and you can't do that in oil and gas. There's way too many variables that go wrong every day and go right. And so having somebody who understands, you know, how to be a little bit quick and nimble at times, there's an advantage there. There is, you know, so it's just pedigree is important. That's all. Pedigree is important. So just trying to point that out, sir.
Right. Yeah, it's important. It's like, you know, you could be have lots of different pedigrees. Like you could have a PhD and be a doctor. But does that mean you should run for railroad commission? You know?
No, but I'll tell you what, if the number one problem is accessibility, maybe that's a strength, is bedside manner, you know? And so to me, that's what you have to look at when it comes to the world of politics is what are the issues right now? And you know, right now the Railroad Commission does have issues. There's legitimate issues. There was just a blackout last year. So go ahead and throw a dart at the wall and you're going to find an issue. That's how many issues are going on in the world of oil and gas and in energy. There was a blackout in Texas last year. That is unacceptable in the 21st century. In my opinion, that is unacceptable. You've got government employees giving each other raises, and you've got growing government and all kinds of different things, and the people are getting less services and more taxes. That's unacceptable. And I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat, if you've been there for 10, 20 years, that's on you. You were hired by the people to make changes, and the changes are not for the better. I mean, a lot of this stuff would have happened anyway. It's kind of like Y2K. You know, the government did a really good job of taking credit for Y2K, when in reality, the banking industry should have got credit for it. The banking industry was the one that was in trouble because they went from punch cards to two digits to four digits. And if you're telling me that Citibank and Goldman Sachs are not going to spend the money to figure out how to turn two digits into four digits so the world doesn't fall apart and planes don't crash in the sky, you're crazy. Of course they're going to. What the government did is they jumped on a cause that was happening and then took credit for it. And they're trying to do that with this whole climate change thing too. When I look at the way the world, the energy world is going, the oil and gas industry is the leader in the environmental movement, and then they allowed the government to hijack them. And now the government turned the script on them a little bit and saying, you're now the people in causing the problems.
Well, you know, I think, Jason, what they did is they decided to invest their money in certain buckets.
Yeah.
Like wind, solar. And so because they put their money there, they were going to subsidize those industries and make sure that things were in place with regulations that would be friendly to their investments. And because that was a way for them to invest in something different than oil and gas, and something that they could try to attempt to control. And even though the power source is not reliable, it is very unreliable, as we know here in Texas.
I honestly truly believe that blackouts in Texas are a result of special interests, bar none.
If we still have coal plants, Jason, we wouldn't have this problem. But the EPA and the Obama administration, which Joe Biden was a part of, they made sure that Texas's baseload power was going to get cut out from underneath it, and that we would be put into a bind. And what we have done is supplemented that baseload power with natural gas, which is great. However, if we're going to do that, we have to make sure that that natural gas electricity production does not have any issues, and that it is as secure as a coal-fired plant as far as the power generation. So we're going to have to conduct quarterly audits in order to make sure that we have everything just right and we're able to meet the demand with the supply we have. We've taken inventory of our energy supply that can withstand harsh temperatures, and we know that we can handle the energy supply to meet that demand as a function of actually providing the electricity at the source. There's different ways we can do that with free market approaches. The best way to do that is to start mining more Bitcoin across Texas and generating electricity. And people are like, well, Tom, what do you mean? How can that be? Well, it's real simple. You tie an ERCOT license to that as well, and you get the availability to put that electricity onto the Texas grid. Now, you're going to have to get a license from FERC as well, and that's probably a two-year waiting period thanks to our federal government. But we need to have a process in place where we do this across Texas, and we use all the flared gas we have to create electricity and mine Bitcoin with it. Because the best way to mine Bitcoin is with flared gas. And if we really want to be the number one leader in the nation in Bitcoin mining, we're going to have to do what Wyoming did over 2 years ago when they decided they wanted to be the number one in the nation. They went ahead and repealed their flared gas tax. So once again, you may say, well, Tom, what is a flared gas tax? Is that a tax you pay when you flare gas? No, it's actually a tax you pay when you take flare gas and you turn it into electricity. You're having to pay a tax on that gas because you're using it to do something now, whereas before it was just being lit on fire and you weren't paying any tax. If you use it for something, they want you to pay a tax on it.
So if you flare the gas, you don't pay anything.
That's right.
And if you turn around and sell it by generating it into electricity, you not only have the cost of the generation, but then you've got a tax on top of it?
Correct. And they're crippling the availability to grow Bitcoin mining and electricity production in the state of Texas by keeping that flared gas tax in place. They have had opportunity to do this. I have spoken to state reps in Texas numerous times while they were in sessions this summer for months and said, hey, while you are there, you need to pass this. This should be bipartisan, slam dunk, go ahead and do it. And they all wrote it off and said, no, it's not important. So guess what? This is my biggest issue that I'm running on, actually, is repealing the flare gas tax in Texas. Americans for Prosperity is a group here in America that goes around and makes sure we do everything we can to maximize prosperity. I spoke to them about doing this in Texas, and they were all for it. So I have people lining up next to me saying, Tom, you're correct. Texas does need to do this. So this is just another example of Texas not being near as conservative as people think it really is. If we were, we would have did this immediately when Wyoming did it. If we were really conservative, we would have called a special session just to go ahead and get this thing done and move on down the road and make sure we're number one. But Greg Abbott and the Speaker, they haven't done this. It's not, you know, on the top of the radar. I'm here as a statewide elected official candidate, the Bitcoin candidate. I'm telling you, we need to do this. I'm telling every Texan we need to do this. And if you really believe me, you get behind me, come to my website, slopingfortexas.com, drop in $5, $10. It'd be nice to have a little donation. It's going to help us out tremendously when it comes to talking to big donors. The more individual donations we have, the better. So even if you're from out of state, go ahead and make a $5 donation. I would really appreciate it. And we're going to advance the Bitcoin cause here in Texas. And we're going to bring the cheapest Bitcoin mining to America. And we're going to have a cleaner environment on top of it. That's just a cherry on top. That's just for taking advantage of the situation and picking the low-hanging fruit. That's all that's being done here.
First thing that comes to my mind when we're talking about flaring is, and I've got some challenges on Bitcoin, which we can talk about off the air. Just has to do with more of the heat index and that sort of thing. Anything north of the Mason-Dixon line, Bitcoining can happen. Anything south of the Mason-Dixon line, there's some heat issues that come into play, that sort of thing. So, I just wanted to be fair about that because, you know, we definitely try to attack whatever we could from a journalistic point of view. And here's the other journalistic point of view when we're talking about emission management that rarely gets talked about, and this does bother me, is very few people talk about the mineral owners. And that is something that's really important because in some states, when you flare the gas, you don't have to pay the mineral owners. So there is so much incentive by the government to flare gas, it's unbelievable. On the flip side, where if you have to put in the cost in order to maybe break even or lose a little money to generate some electricity and turn around and sell it to the grid and then get taxed on top of it. And then if you got to turn around and then sell, you know, pay the mineral owners too, well, now you got more costs and more costs and more costs if you're the operator. So I get their problem. But at the same time, if I'm the mineral owner, and I've said this from day one, I don't give a shit if you're flaring it or you're making $1 million. You owe me, buddy. That stuff's coming out of the ground. It doesn't matter if you spill it, you light it on fire, or you turn it into whatever. And not all states agree with me on that one. So that's why I'm pretty upfront with it. But I don't know how Texas is set up, but something for you to think about is the actual mineral owners with this.
Right. And so make sure you pay the mineral owners. There's always something in their language in there. Make sure that they're getting paid. The operator is always getting paid something as well. And so usually the mineral owner's making like 50 cents at MCF, whereas before they were making nothing before.
Yeah, but I mean, when the gas is getting flared, do they get paid at that point or no?
They don't get anything when it's being flared.
That's so, what I mean, yeah. And so that is another incentive from the government not to do emission management.
Right. And so if you eliminate this flare gas tax, it's an incentive to be as efficient as possible with the energy we have. It is another incentive that the government, our government, has control over, a lever to pull that will increase business and will increase revenue and business taxes in the state of Texas. If we just go ahead and pull that lever and eliminate the flare gas tax, it's the common sense thing to do. And it's a shame that our legislators in Austin and our governor have not chosen to do it yet. But I am the voice of reason and common sense here. And I'm here to tell you that if you send me to the Railroad Commission, I will make sure that I do everything possible to get that flare gas tax repealed.
You know, I've seen enough numbers and enough graphs to, you know, just eyeball, look at things and see what a mineral owner gets, you know, and in a lot of cases, and it's not much, but it is something they do rely on, you know, getting $800 a month or a couple thousand bucks a month. You're not getting rich on it, but you are taking a vacation. You're having a boat. You're investing that money is what I'm getting at, is that you're repurposing it out in the economy. And when those minerals payments go away, a lot of times those people have to figure out a way to subsidize that money, and then the government's got to do it sometimes. And so, anyway.
It's just that everybody makes more money doing it right now.
Yes.
And the government's making this tax on it, and it's just restricting the amount that we could be doing. And we just need to do the right thing, the smart thing, and repeal this tax. But, you know, there's also other problems in Texas I'm going to talk about. Besides the landfill in East Texas that Wayne Christian's donors are trying to put in and, you know, of course, making sizable donations to his campaign. Besides that, we also have a huge backlog of orphaned wells in the Railroad Commission. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how much liability there is in the state of Texas. There's an organization called Carbon Tracker out of Colorado, this liberal organization. And they have put out a study that says Texas has over $1 billion. I forgot how much it was. It was a ridiculous number. It was absolutely just, you know, way out in left field. And the reason I know this is because part of what I do is asset retirement obligation studies. I guess I plug wells and do decommissioning work. I do workovers, recompletions. I've even done a little bit of drilling with some friends of mine. But really, asset retirement obligation. It's everything into perspective when you're talking about a large group of assets for a company. And so when you're talking about how many orphaned wells here we have in the state of Texas, it's definitely something you have to do a study on because there's thousands of them. In fact, there's around 6,000 orphaned wells in the state of Texas. And so, you know, Carbon Tracker, like I said, their number was over $1 billion. After looking at it, studying it myself, and putting pen to paper, my number is around $200 million. And so when Carbon Tracker released the study, it actually got published in the Houston Chronicle, and people read it as fact, basically, when it was not. And so Wayne Christian wrote an op-ed, and it got published, and it basically said, Carbon Tracker's wrong, the real number's much lower. Well, yeah, I agree, Wayne, the real number is much lower, but, you know, it's still a number that we have to bear with and handle because it's getting bigger and bigger. And so if something's getting bigger and you're not solving the problem, you have to figure out how you're going to solve that problem, make it go away. This is not Washington, D.C. This is Texas. We don't kick the can down the road in Texas if we have a problem. We take care of it, right? And so I have a solution to this. I think it's great. I think a lot of other people in America are doing it. People in Texas are doing it. It's basically using nonprofits, and there's plenty of them, not just the one I helped start, but there's plenty of them in Texas that specialize in plugging orphan wells. And these nonprofits can go out and raise money in the public and take their money and go take orphan wells off the list of the Railroad Commission's list and make them disappear, plug them, help landowners out, get this stuff done. So we can get the orphan well count down to zero. But what we do need in order to make this happen on a big scale effect and really have an impact is we need cooperation from people at the Railroad Commission and from private industry and public industry here in Texas, people that are obviously oil and gas and champion these nonprofits, that people, you know, just that are in everyday business, they care about Texans, should be helping to champion this. Ideally, end of the line for fuel, the gas pump, where the buyer buys it, the end user, that is really where we should be seeing some kind of donation process take place to support these nonprofits and make these orphan wells disappear. The reason you want to do this is because you want to use money that comes from nonprofits because that's not taxpayer money, really. If you donate to these, you get a write-off on your taxes, and that's good for the people doing it. And so, you know, yeah, you're taking away from some of the federal taxes, but that's a federal tax write-off. It's not the state of Texas. And so that's a really good thing, actually, for the state of Texas, for us to be able to do that. We don't have to stick our hands into the state of Texas money till or go dig into the rainy day fund if we would simply support nonprofits to do this. If we simply had people at the Railroad Commission that are willing to say, yes, we can address this issue and we can use nonprofits to help make it happen, that is the answer to do this in short order. And so if I'm elected Railroad Commissioner, I would like to champion nonprofits to do this and say, hey, industry, let's come together and make this problem disappear. I only want to be Railroad Commissioner for 6 years and then leave and go do something else. So, you know, within 6 years, we should be able to get rid of 6,000 wells if we're able to go out and raise the money and get industry in the state of Texas and businesses to kind of cooperate without using taxpayer money. We can go out and we can handle this. We can make it work. In fact, we might actually be able to lower the cost to plug a well in the state of Texas. Two different ways to do that. One, by using new materials that we can sequester into a well and obtain a carbon credit. That's one way. And then two, if we get rid of all these orphaned wells, then we could actually make the argument that we need to lower bonding, because Republicans this year raised bonding. That's correct. They raised bonding in Texas on oil and gas companies. Of course, you won't hear Greg Abbott, Wayne Christian, anybody for that matter that's a Republican in the state of Texas go out and campaign on this. They don't want you to talk about it at all. And yes, bonding on oil and gas companies was raised in the state of Texas. What is funny is that I hear from people running for judge in West Texas and a lot of these counties that the judge they're running against is taking campaign donations from Big Wind. And the campaign promise is that we'll donate to your campaign, but we don't want to pay any bonding to put up a windmill in your county. So the taxpayers are basically on the hook for the decommissioning for a windmill, which for each one of these windmills, that's $450,000 to decommission a windmill. That's not getting any cheaper right now. So that being said, that's really crazy stuff that's going on. Republicans in Texas are raising bonding on oil and gas companies, and they're also taking campaign donations from Big Wind, so these Big Wind companies won't have to pay any bonding money at all. That's what's happening in Texas.
It's interesting, too, how the wind industry, specifically the wind industry, these big turbines, they don't have any. As far as I know, there's no reclamation plan or program. Nobody's putting money aside for them. It's the landowner's responsibility at the end of the day, from my understanding, just like the oil and gas world. If the oil company goes out of business, well, landowner, you got a well on your property. Good luck. That's kind of how all this problem started, right?
The state of Texas is not requiring bonding for wind.
Yeah, okay. The bonding, yeah. We have that in North Dakota, too. It's like $5,000.
Yeah, the state of Texas requires bonding for oil and gas, but they don't require bonding for wind.
You can't even take the executives out for a night of dinner on $5,000.
The county, it's a county thing. So if a county gets paid enough money, if the guy running for office, if the incumbent wants to stay in office and big wind comes and says, hey, we'll give you $50,000, we just need you to do this favor, just one thing for us. We don't want to pay any bond for these next 500 windows we're going to put up in your county, and don't worry about us. You know, like, we'll take care of it. Yeah, okay. So go ahead with that argument, you know. But that, for me, an oil and gas guy, I'm a whole man. That doesn't fly for me. I'm not going to sit here as somebody in the industry and watch Republicans raise bonding on oil and gas, not take care of our liability in terms of working wells, and then go ahead and turn the cheek and turn the blind eye when big wind wants to come in and put in windmills for nothing. They're already getting subsidized to the hill by the federal government. Wind power subsidized way out. So they want the whole thing to be subsidized by not only getting the federal subsidies, but by getting zero bonding as well for the construction of these things. Well, that's a slam dunk for big wind. I guess big wind's got, you know, all the Republicans in Texas on the
pay,
except for me, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what's going on
here.
I guess I'll find out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's that way up here in North Dakota, too, because a lot of our energy companies, oil companies, they're doing wind work. And, you know, our governor, he calls the big mural of Greta Thunberg in downtown Fargo art, so he can appease that side of, you know, the aisle. And it's just, you know, whatever. There's a certain group of people that are really untouchable at the end of the day. There's a certain group of people that are untouchable, and there's a certain group of people that they could say that the sun rises in the east, and the certain group of untouchable people won't pay attention to them, won't care, but they'll repackage and say, you know, the sun rises over by New York. So that way they can take the same thing, repackage it to the people with just a little bit different of a spin on it, so it looks like they're the authority figure, and they do it by pressing you down at the same time. How are you going to combat that? Because the establishment, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, a lot of people, they've got a pretty good inroad to where they can become pretty ruthless, and the average person has no idea how ruthless the people are. So you're getting into a political race. How are you going to, you know, engage and deal with some of these issues? Because these are real, you know?
Yeah, you know, and I'm waiting. What I want is a debate, really. I want everyone to show up and debate me. I've already been informed that Wayne Christian will not be debating anyone. So I'm not, no surprise there.
Oh, really? They said that, huh?
People that have tried to get in contact with him to schedule a debate have been turned down. I know that.
And you're talking, now this is for a primary, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that sucks.
Which in Texas, Jason, the primary is the election. Okay,
No, it's the same way in North Dakota. It's the same way. But that's too bad. It's too bad because really what you've got is, I got no problem with Wayne Christian. What I got a problem with is when the Republicans are the ones that preach on founding fathers and Republic and all this stuff, and if you can't even do a debate, come on, that's democracy 101, man.
A career politician that doesn't want to debate. Now you tell me.
Well, because you got everything to lose. You gain nothing by going out and debating against two new guys. From a political standpoint, oh God, no. You don't want to debate because you already got the victory. You're an incumbent. In the United States, incumbents win 92% of the time. Okay? In the Soviet Union, when they were at their highest communist state of the Pulse Bulletin or whatever that was back in the late 70s, 80s or whatever, it was at 87. We are at a higher incumbent election rate than the communist Soviet Union was in its height. I'm not kidding you. Go look it up. I'm not saying that we are Soviet Union. All I'm saying is I don't like that number. That's all I'm saying. I just don't like that stat. So.
It can't be a good thing for
America. No, I mean, but when you've got guys that are getting, you know, DUIs in offices, drug charges in offices, and they're getting reelected, that's a pretty strong incumbent, to be honest, you know, and that sort of thing. So I just ask, you know, I mean, you're doing what I think you should be doing. You're hitting, you know, you're going out and you're beating the pavement. So you're putting a few miles on your pedometer. I don't know if you're tracking your mileage or not.
I think I'm on probably 9,000 by now.
Yeah, I mean, so you can track your mileage with your feet, but you're also understanding the different medias too. You know, you're going on radio, you're going on social media, you're hitting up, you know, the old folks home. You get it, man.
I'm going all over Texas. I'm talking to everybody from the young Republicans to the Montgomery County Tea Party and everything in between. So there's nothing, there's nowhere on the Republican spectrum I have not hit. And when I come across Democrats, I go ahead and introduce myself. And guess what? A lot of them are like, you know what? Like, yeah, I might actually vote for a Republican just because this guy seems like he's full of common sense. And doesn't sound like he's full of crap either. Like, it sounds like he's got industry experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had lots of people that are just, you know, self-admitted Democrats tell me that they like me and they want to vote for me. Just because they met me. And so I will say that, you know, 99% of the time when I meet somebody, it's an instant sell, you know, pretty easy. So I do lots of block walking and lots of events and get out and shake hands. It's about to, we're about to have lots of fun.
I was going to say, and that's the way to do it, because whether people in these political parties like to admit it or not, Ross Perot showed there was a crack in the system. Jesse the Body Ventura's victory in Minnesota showed it can be done. There has been a third-party challenger that has been coming out of the woodworks to where Trump actually maybe could have won as a third party, but they didn't want to risk it, so he ran as a Republican. But he essentially was the non-political politician that won that really America has been salivating for since probably about Ross Perot. So the reason I say that is not because of, oh, we're going to have a third party come out. We might. We very well could have The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, become the People's Party and become the next president. That could happen. But I think what you're going to have is you're going to have more people switching sides. You're going to have more people that are not going to vote all Republican, all Democrat. You're going to have more people that are going to vote this way on this issue, this way on this issue. I think that's what you're going to have more than anything. That makes sense to you a little bit about what the vibe is out there? There's a lot of uncertainty within the political parties.
I think the vibe is we want fresh new blood, and that turnover is better, and that when you have somebody with industry experience, which is kind of like, I say that, you know, kind of like that's what Trump had to some degree. His industry experience was running corporate America to some degree and being in media. He was on NBC for years, and he had a brand built. In America, that's kind of part of being a president or becoming presidential material, was kind of building your brand and being able to market yourself. So this guy was ready to go from day one, and the media thought that there was no way he would get elected. And so they went and ran with it and gave him all this press, and he just turned red hot. And after that, it didn't matter what happened. He was going to win the election.
Do you want to know how ready people were for someone else? And I say this all the time. Donald Trump said, if you want to so-and-so with a woman, you go up and grab her in the hoo-ha. And then in the next week, he made fun of Marco Rubio for having small hands, making genitalia jokes. That's how. But that's how untouchable he was, and also how much people were ready for something else. To where Howard Dean made a funny noise 20 years ago, and that was the end of his political career. Some guy didn't wear the right color flag lapel button on his suit, and that was the end of his career. Trump said those things that I just said, and he won.
Trump was just always on the offense. So when you're always on the offense and you're always fighting, if you take an arrow here or you take a bullet there, it's not that big of a deal because you're such a machine that's on the offense. You're firing, you know, nuclear missiles, and you're getting hit with a BB gun here and there, especially somebody that has a brand of followers like he did.
I was going to say, he understood that the media is just a reaction. Okay, so as much as the media tries to stay ahead of things, like we try to, you know, we try to bring in the existential energy and do the old school magazine, hey, let's look ahead and pontificate. Well, now the media pontificates and questions things that are just ridiculous. You know, they'll question things about flat earth and things that are just a waste of time. And what Trump understands is that, or what he understood and still does, I believe, because I've seen interviews where he's talked about this, is the media is a reaction. Even the talking heads that think they're ahead of the curve, they're still reacting. And so as long as you got this big machine reacting to you and giving you access, man, you got a lot of control. And he got that. He understood that, you know. So that's why social media is different. Social media, you can go on the offense if you want. And he did do that. Dude, he would wake up. Dude, listen to me. You would wake up and the news would be some Twitter post he'd do at 2 in the morning. Think about that. That was the national news.
The guy just was a news-making machine. All he did was make news. And, I mean, the media, you know how much money they made off of Donald Trump happening?
Huge.
Let's beat around the bush here, you know?
The whole reason they do that clown car circus thing where they'll take seven candidates out on MSNBC and CNN and Fox is totally for money. So they can sell radio spots. And then it works for the politicians because, you know, Michelle Bachmann and Harold Cain or Herman Cain and, you know, these people that are not going to become president, they get a six-figure speaking circuit deal after that. So it helps them out with their career. It helps the media out because it helps them sell ads. The only losers are the American public because they got to put up with that crap. And they got, it just dominates the news cycle when it's all speculative. There's no real news behind it. And that's damaging when you're dominating the media with speculation. The media is supposed to report. You're not supposed to give your, you know, that sort of thing. You want to talk about rail on the media. Now's your opportunity. I just set you up a little bit. What are some of the problems that you see with the media with some of the elections and that sort of thing?
Oh, God, the media? Good grief.
I mean, you know, we'll wrap up here, but I just was curious because, you know, it's my industry. What we have problems with the media, too. When I was trained as a journalist, we were trained not to yell fire in a crowded theater because somebody might die. You might get trampled, okay? And Orson Welles did War of the World, and people jumped out of buildings and proved it, that the media can kill people through fear. Okay?
I really fast. What's wrong with the media? Journalists don't want to be journalists anymore. That means they don't actually want to do work anymore. That means, like, I launched my campaign, and I've had one real sit-down interview with one journalist, and that's a guy named Matthew Stringer. Here in Odessa. He called me up and said, please, let's meet up. I would love to interview you. And that man is actually a conservative and also has a position with the Hector County GOP. Sit down and talk to me.
Hold on, back up. Has a position with the Hector County what?
GOP.
Okay, and then you cut out for a bit, so go ahead.
Yeah, and so he's an active person in the party, very active in the party. He's run for JP in Medford County. And he's also a private investigator. So he does a number of things, but very talented guy. And so, but he's the only person. So well, that's a big problem. You know, our own media, they don't care about this race enough to actually even sit down and talk to me or even, you know, wonder why it is I'm running or write an article. And so they're not willing to do their job in races like this, and then they want to complain about it. Hey, I don't want to hear about it. I want to actually see media that wants to interview people and hold debates and start holding people accountable. That's what I want to see. But what I see is the exact opposite. I see a very lazy media, journalists that don't want to do their job, don't want to do interviews, don't care about races, or maybe, who knows, are taking a part in campaign and pulling levers for them behind the scenes. I don't know. But I will tell you this. You know, like I said, Matthew Stringer's the only reporter that has actually sat down with me. Sergio Chapa is supposed to do something, I think, eventually with Bloomberg. But I don't know. I haven't seen anything. There's really nothing, no kind of like get to know the candidate, in-depth interviews, nothing like that. And then they want to complain if it's, well, you have an opportunity in the primary, because in Texas, if you're going to win statewide office, it's going to be a primary race. That's going to be it. So that's the deal. That's the deal. I had to let you know on that.
No, that's okay, because I go off in the media all the time with a lot of it today is media Mad Libs, where they'll get together for their morning meeting and they'll basically come up with the narrative, and then they send the reporters out to go fill in the blanks. And it's in order to appease, whether it's the, you know, special interest group or the advertiser or whatever the political crap is behind the scenes, instead of just letting the story be what it is, you know. And a lot of times stories are not political. Stories are just stories that are filled with human emotion and, you know, achievement and satisfaction and goals and shame and despair even. You know, that's the way journalism used to be. Now, it's either got to be some Hollywood bent or some political bent or whatever the case is. And so, you know, I hope you can lean on us. You know, one of the things that opened my eyes as a journalist, we talked a little bit about some of my executive producing days, some of the things I saw behind the scenes that disgusted me with the way the government treats the media and uses the media. But when I went out to Baker, Montana, which is ground zero, is the on-ramp for the Keystone Pipeline. And that community was going to be impacted big time. And this is when the pipeline was in all kinds of the news and this and that. And I went out there and I spent a day with the locals and the economic boards and the farmers, the landowners. And anyway, just embedded myself in there. And you know what I found out? I was the second media person to show up there in like 15 years. It's like the number one story on the planet. And everybody's got their opinion, facts, and everything else as they sit behind their keyboard and they click and clack away. And the Crude Life and the Huffington Post Canada were the only two reporter journalists that actually went to Baker, Montana to do interviews and actually get some real boots on the ground journalism. That opened my eyes a lot to how the media world is run. So I think it's important for people to know that a lot of what is going on right now in the world of news is somebody sitting behind a computer. No different than your kids playing video games. You could probably get news off of the radio from Grand Theft Auto, and people wouldn't know the difference nowadays. So what you're doing is really important. Going out there, pressing the flesh, actually seeing people, hearing. When you could actually get face-to-face with somebody, they get real. If they're typing something, no, they're not so much. Not so much. So anyway, good for you for getting out there. Sorry, I just want to tie everything together the best I could. I'm not sure how I did, so I'm going on about 2 hours of sleep. We got socked here with about 15 feet of snow yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's There's so much the media just chooses not to cover oftentimes, and for whatever reasons, maybe the story is not going to sell, or I don't know, for whatever reasons.
What happens
is you get uninformed voters, mm-hmm. and so then you have politicians that run for office. They may run on an issue that has nothing to do with an office whatsoever. And because the voters don't even know what the issues are or even know what the agency is or what they do, I'll just throw one out there, like the Land Commission office in Texas. Like, can anybody tell me actually what the General Land Office, the GLO, the Land Commission, can anybody tell me what it is that they do? Or for that matter, the Railroad Commission, right? It's like, can anybody, if you ask the average person off the street, no. Should it be called the Texas Oil and Gas Commission? Yeah. Is that common sense? Yeah. Am I proud to work in oil and gas? Yes. Is there any reason why we shouldn't really? Well, somebody might say, it costs a lot of money to rename something. Well, you don't have to do it all in one day. You can spread it out over 10 or 15 years. Do one pickup truck at a time, I don't know. But a lot of stuff is online these days. So you're just talking about signage in general, really. I don't know. I don't see a problem with calling it the Texas Oil, Gas, and Energy, or Texas Energy, or something along that lines of Texas Energy Commission or something, maybe. But to call it the Railroad Commission now, when it has absolutely nothing railroads, to me, is just kind of silly. I mean, it's just kind of like, come on, guys. What's going on?
Whenever I talk to the railroad commissioners, I always kind of make either joke on the air or off the air that it shows you how powerful the railroad was. How basically even the flow of energy had to basically go through the railroad at one time, at least to build the pipelines or whatever, the materials had to go through the Railroad Commission. Because that's how powerful that monopoly. Well, they were known as the Big Bad Wolf, they'd go in and they had their own sheriff and everything. So, it's the railroad, man. Manifest destiny. Depends on how you want to look at it. All right, man, we're getting down to the crunch time. You got a couple months till the primary. How can people donate and give them your elevator pitch?
Yeah, so here's the deal. If you want more money to be made in Texas, which produces more tax revenue for Texas, which pays for more roads and schools, etc. So if you want more revenue for the state of Texas in general, you want business to grow, if you're a fan of business growing like I am, if you're really for capitalism and for free market responses, then you're going to be voting for Tom Slocum on February 14th for Railroad Commissioner, okay? It's that simple. If you're a real conservative, if you actually care about fiscal responsibility, you're going to vote for Tom Slocum on February 14th for Railroad Commissioner. If you really love Texas and you really care about our future, you're going to go to slocumfortexas.com and you're going to make a donation. Even if it's just a $10 or $20 donation, you're going to let me know that you really care about Texas and that you want your voice to be heard. Because I'm going to do everything I can to accomplish those objectives of cleaning the slate on all the orphan wells we have, which in turn produces a cleaner environment, really. It's the cherry on top, and you protect a lot of water. That's a good thing. Look, listen, we don't have much fresh water out here in West Texas. We need all the fresh water we can get. One day before I'm dead, we'll be pumping it from East Texas over to West Texas, maybe in my lifetime. Who knows? Maybe people will get on board with that idea. But we need to do everything we can to protect what we have here in West Texas and all over Texas, for that matter. Water's like gold. And so if we start treating it like a commodity, and we could actually make a lot of money. We may have so much excess water we could sell it to California. Who knows, But we've got to get on that. We got to tackle that problem. We got to tackle the energy problem and make sure that we got the supply to meet the demand. We got to get rid of all these orphan wells. We've got a lot to do on our plate that needs to get done. We don't need another 6 years of nothing getting done by having the same person or somebody else that doesn't know the industry really well or doesn't have solutions like I have. I've got solutions for these issues. I've been working on it for years, okay? And I know what we can do and what produces good revenue without us spending taxpayer money. These are conservative solutions that need to be implemented. This is smart policy, repealing the flared gas tax. That's a no-brainer, absolute no-brainer. Just simple stuff like that that needs to happen. It needs to happen now. We don't need to wait. We need to do it right now. So help me out. Go to selectmanfortexas.com. Drop in a few dollars. I'd really appreciate it. And you're going to help Texas out tremendously.